Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All of the stories that came back were all based around where this anxiety has come from and why it had manifested right now in that point in my life.
You're listening to The Ghost Files, the podcast where everyday people share their extraordinary experiences of the spirit world. My name is Karina Machado. I'm a journalist who spent more than a decade telling stories about the spirit world through my books, Spirit Sisters, Where Spirits Dwell, and Love Never Dies, as well as my podcasts, Spirit Sisters, and now this show, The Ghost Files. From at least the age of four, my guest, Tegan Vandenberg, has been close to the spirit world. As a little girl, she could accurately predict events that would befall those around her and has always been able to sense and see spirit people, both in her dreams and waking life. These gifts followed Tegan into her adult years. Tegan has also always felt drawn to the topic of past lives and has a deeply felt affinity with medieval times in particular. Yet, despite her fascination with the idea, she didn't take steps to delve deeper until May 2019, when a challenging time in her life prompted her to seek a past life regression. You'll be astounded when you hear what happened next. Hi, Tegan. Welcome to The Ghost Files.
Thank you for having me.
Now, let's start with you telling the listeners a little about yourself and your life today.
So I'm a single mum. I have two little people. They're 10 and 8. I live in Brisbane. My job is as a trained teacher, but I work in a different field to do with health at the moment.
One of the things that I found really interesting about you, and there's plenty of things to find interesting about you, but one of them was that people do a double take when they find out that you have a keen interest in spirituality. Why do you think that is?
I think it's just mostly because I am quite logical and structured in different ways. My job role is very kind of by the book. I follow a lot of rules and regulations. So I guess spirituality kind of feels a little bit outside of that kind of structure. And sometimes it's a little bit hard to kind of put side by side, I think.
Tegan, tell us about your childhood years and the spirits that you were sensing and the premonitions that you were having as a little girl.
I think it's just one of those things when you're growing up that I didn't realize that it was something that other people didn't do. I just thought that it was normal. So I would kind of just see things out the corner of my eye, maybe know things before other people would know them, have dreams. I have a lot of dreams that are have a lot of premonitions in them. But I just thought that that was a me thing, and it wasn't really anything that our family kind of discussed. So it wasn't really anything that I kind of thought to share.
Can you give us an example of either a dream that was a premonition or a spirit that you saw, or indeed both?
I guess I can remember a time when we were younger and I was quite close to my grandmother, my mum's mum, and they've got a very large family of you know, lots of people. And I can remember being in the room and saying to her later after a family gathering, oh, you know, Auntie so-and-so that was there. And she was like, no, she wasn't there. She's passed away a long time ago. But it was just kind of like, all right, well, that happened. We'll just move on.
Yeah, and it's often like that. So just to break that down a little bit, so that was a big family gathering and you saw a person there that to your eye looked like a flesh and blood person but was actually a spirit person, an ancestor, family member.
Yeah. And they kind of weren't really involved in the family gathering. It was just kind of someone that was off to the side. And, you know, as an adult, I look back and think maybe I just saw them out of the corner of my eye and then I looked away, but maybe it was just something about them that made me take more notice of them, if that makes sense. And yeah, when I checked with my grandmother later on, she was like, oh, that sounds like, you know, Auntie so-and-so. And when we had a photo, it was like, oh, yeah, that was who I saw.
Wow. And how old were you when that happened?
Oh, probably about 10.
Okay.
I reckon.
But as you say, like, you just took this as a matter of course. You thought that everybody had these kinds of experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. And I didn't really kind of chat to any friends about that sort of thing because I just thought that they did it as well. So it was kind of not really anything that was a conversation of, oh, have you seen, you know, have you seen a spirit lately? It wasn't really anything that I chatted about. So, yeah, I just thought it was something that was normal.
And I think you were around that age when you were assigned a project about medieval times. Is that right?
Yes, correct, yes.
Now, this triggered something in you. Tell us about what happened.
We were just doing like a research article about, you know, medieval times and as a class. And I remember doing lots of research and kind of getting very engrossed into it, much more than my peers were. And in amongst the research, I came across something in particular that sparked my interest. And I remember at the time thinking, oh, that's not what that was used for. I think it was like a cart or a, you know, a tool or something like that. And it had it down as being a particular thing. But I can remember thinking, that's not what that was for. That's used for something else. But at the time, it was just kind of a thought. And then I tucked that away in the back of my mind, but it never really sat with me, right? But it's always been something that was in the back of my mind.
That's amazing for, you know, a grade four child to go into that kind of depth and then to have that thought. Where would such a thought come from? How could you possibly have that knowledge that that cart wasn't what you were reading about, wasn't used for what you were reading about?
Oh, I think that's kind of what really sparked a deep interest in me in terms of how would I know that? What kind of knowledge would I have had before in order to kind of have that knowledge about that now or even think that was a thing? So I think that really sparked in me an interest around where did we come from and where are we going and where are we who we are and what's our history and are we just people or are we spirits or, you know, and where does that kind of a relationship between our current person now and our previous spirit, I guess, come from?
Yeah, and they're all very profound questions for a little girl to be mulling over, you know. But it's interesting because a lot of children are around that age, around, you know, early, mid-primary school when they begin to have those questions or that those, and certainly that was the case with me as well. So there must be something, some sort of threshold at that age. It's fascinating. So as you say, you had that experience where your, you know, an interest in medieval times was triggered by this project, but you sort of buried it, didn't you? Or you just went on with your, you know, childhood life?
Oh, it was just something that was kind of tucked in the back of my mind, I think, as time went on. I have lots of notebooks from when I was a teenager where I've done lots of research in reincarnation and other spiritual things, I guess, like spontaneous human combustion and other kind of interesting, not so typical topics for, I say, 15-year-olds to kind of research. But that's always been in the back of my mind and it's always just been something that's tucked away.
Yes. And did you come to any conclusions as a teenager? Was there anything, did it give you comfort? Did anything that you uncovered, you know, answer your questions?
I think I just like accepted the knowledge that, yeah, you know, potentially there was that something there before, but as a person who I was, I didn't have any proof of that or where I had come from. And so for me, it was kind of like, oh, you know, that's great. We must have come from somewhere. There must be something that we're working towards in this lifetime. But I think at that age group, you're just trying to get through, like you're just plodding through the hormones. You're just trying to get to be, you know, finish uni and get out into the workforce.
So absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So it just kind of got put to the back of my mind, I guess.
In May of last year, you were able to finally shed some light on this profound connection that you felt to this era, this particular era of the medieval times. Tell us, please, Tegan, what led to your decision to have a past life regression?
So I had a pretty hectic breakup. We were only really together for about 18 months, but it was kind of a really hot burn type relationship, and it fell apart, and I went from being very logical and very, you know, okay about the world and to having being diagnosed with anxiety, depression. I was on medication. It was all really hectic and I was really struggling with just waking up and getting on with life. And at that point, I think I sat down with one of my friends and said, oh, I can't just keep taking medication. I need to kind of work out why exactly is this happening? You know, why am I feeling like this? And maybe this is trying to teach me something, and maybe this is breaking me down as a person in order to rebuild it, but I need to kind of start to investigate that and not wait for it to come to me. So at that point, I decided that I would try a past life regression. It had been something on my list because of everything that I had researched when I was younger, but it just felt like right then was the right time to go and do it.
Mm. How did you go about finding the right person? Because you'd never done this before. So was that difficult, that process?
I think it was exactly the same as waiting for it to happen. I did a bit of research. I waited for that to sit with me for a while. I kind of really kind of waited till I felt like I'd found the right person. I was looking for someone who had experience, who had been doing it for a while, who had some proven, not just like local experience, but, you know, on a bigger scale.
Yeah.
So I felt like I wasn't going to someone in a backyard, you know, who was practicing and hoping for the best.
Yes, yes. Okay. Now, when you found this person, you mentioned that they warned you not to expect too much or expect indeed anything, but you proved them wrong there. But tell us about that, what they said to you.
Yeah, she said, look, lots of people come and try and do past life regressions, but a lot of the time you really only get one, if anything, and sometimes people don't get anything at all. It really just depends on how open your mind is and how easy you are to kind of how that kind of comes to fruition, I guess, during the session itself. But she's like, it's an unpredictable, I guess, method.
Yes.
So when you're working with someone's mind, it's not like you're working with numbers, and it's not always going to have the same result every single time.
Yeah, of course, because they say that some people are good candidates for regression and others not so good. So you just went with an open mind.
I did. I was like, well, if we get nothing, we get nothing. And if we get something, we get something. So that's great.
Okay. So tell us about what unfolded.
It was a very kind of unusual experience, I guess. How it felt was really different to something that I'd really kind of ever felt or let myself feel before. And I guess it felt a lot like somebody was just like, I was awake, but my brain was working, but at the same time, I wasn't in control. And for someone who has a lot of control issues, which is me, this was something that was massively unusual for me. So it took a little while to sit into it, but eventually I did, and she managed to get out one very clear early life, and then she decided at that point that she would try, because that one came so easily, obviously. Like, I mean, she has the experience, so she would know whether it comes easily or not, to try some of the others. So I ended up telling her that there was, I think, well, under hypnosis, that there were six lives in particular in this theme. So the hypnosis in particular, you go in and you say, look, I really want an answer to this question. And for me, the question was, why am I feeling like this? Where what is my purpose, and how am I moving on from this anxiety? What's creating it? And so all of the stories that came back were all based around where this anxiety has come from and why it had manifested right now in that point in my life.
So there was a definite theme with, so how many lives did you remember in, or did you reveal in that hypnosis session?
I said that there were six in total under hypnosis, and four lives came out during the hypnosis.
So that's interesting. So you knew that there were six that related to the answer to the question that preceded the session, but only four, you were only given four of them in terms of detail. So tell us about those four.
So the first one that came through was the life of Mary. So under hypnosis, I say that her name is Mary, but then I say it's not Mary. It sounds like Mary. And later on, it felt a bit like Mariette or something that was a bit more Scottish, I guess.
Mm.
But it came to me, I get some visions sometimes when I kind of let go. And so in the vision that I got, we were in a courtyard of a castle. The ground was muddy. The lady asked me what I was wearing, and I gave a very detailed description of some rags, some tattered leathery type materials, some hide that were on my feet, you know, how busy the place was, how noisy and smelly, and I could, you know, the children rushing around and everybody else moving between spaces. in that life in particular, I described myself as a young female. I said that I felt like I was 40, but I wasn't 40, but I just looked like it. So, and then later on went to say I was quite young.
What year are we talking, do you think?
Around the 1400s is about the time frame.
Okay.
That I got. Yeah. So I could describe my dress in like a beige, thick, coarse material that was very plain and heavy, an apron. And in the life, this lady asked me, you know, what was my job? And I said, my job was to cook. She said, tell us about your life. And I said, my life isn't important. My job is to cook. So, and I just repeated that 3 or 4 times in amongst that discussion of that one. So it really came down, you know, I described the sleeping space and I can still smell it now in straw and like a stone alcove that was kind of underneath a set of stairs where I shared with lots of other people. And during the life, I guess what happened is she didn't have any family there and so she was alone in this castle and all her job was to cook. So she didn't really feel like anybody cared with her because she was dependent on, I guess, the lord of the castle sort of thing. And right at the end, I said that she died alone on a straw bed that smelt ridiculously horrible, alone, scared and hungry.
How old do you think she was when she died?
26, 27, maybe tops.
Okay. So when you're remembering these lives and you're going to tell us about the others, are you in it? Are you in the life and re-experiencing it, or are you sort of seeing it from a perspective above?
No, I really feel like I'm her.
Okay.
So when I see it from her perspective and I can, I look down and I can look down at me. I'm not like a third party above.
Okay. Wow. And so why did she die? Was she sick?
She had stomach pain and fevers and then died from a quick illness pretty much. So who really knows at that time of the thing? And all that came back to me was the stomach pains and the fever and how quick it was.
And then there were others.
Then she moved me forward to the next major life that she brought through, and that was the life of Laura, who was a servant I want to say like an American plainlands, you know, like just 2-story paddock, little house on the prairie type environment.
Yes, so, quite isolated.
Yeah, yeah. And so in Laura's life, she was a servant and she was left to stay back at the house and keep it while the people that owned the house went away and did whatever they needed to do. And while she was waiting for them, they were longer than they said they were going to be, and there was a frost that came through that ruined all the food. So she had no food left. It all got ruined. So she had no food. It got really cold, but she didn't want to leave the house. So in the recount of that, I kept saying that there was a man on a horse that was coming to get me, and so I was basically paranoid about being murdered by people that were outside.
Oh, so like looters or something like that, thieves.
And like highwaymen?
Yeah, 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 okay.
So I didn't want to leave the house and go to the next house to get help because I felt like if I did that, then I would be murdered and hurt or raped or whatever in that process. But so I felt safer in the house, but then I didn't have food in the house. So in that life in particular, Laura died of starvation. I had a couple of dreams about this after I had this done, after I had the regression done.
Oh, really?
Yeah, about Laura in particular. So I don't know why she came through so strongly, but I can picture lying on like the floorboards of the house where the wind is coming up between the floorboards, you know, on those old ones where they don't have anything underneath and it comes through.
Whistling through, yeah.
Yeah, and just being, you know, my hair being so long and straggly and my clothes basically being nothing because they've, you know, so destroyed and old. And then dying from starvation.
Wow, that's... So, go on.
I was just going to say that I remember waking up from that thinking, oh my God, I need to go and get food. I woke up in the middle of the night and like it was midnight snack because I could just remember being so hungry. And of course, that's not me now, but that's, you know, that's the feeling.
So that what you described to us about lying on the floor, her starvation, was what came to you in a subsequent dream after the regression.
Yeah, I saw it happen in the regression, but I think when I had the dreams afterwards, it took the feeling of it. Like I had to relive the feeling of the being alone and being scared and being dependent on someone else. And yeah.
Wow. So far we've got two very sad endings for Merritt and Laura. Yeah. And sadly that theme is continuing, but as you'll tell us later, that had something to reveal to you. But tell us about the third life that emerged in that hypnosis.
So the third life was the life of a man who was a relatively young man and who lived in colonised New South Wales. And in that particular life, I was from the city and I had married somebody who I thought I could be happy with and whatnot. And we were given a parcel of land to go and colonise. That's the right word.
Mm-hmm.
So we moved out and it was very isolated. There was no one else around. And you know, really felt like it was starting from scratch, you know, trying to make their own veggie patches and trying to survive without having, you know, the convenience of city life close by. But there was also like the issue that we were surrounded by, in my dream, natives is what I called them in my vision. But, mm-hmm. So Aboriginal people, and I described them as, you know, dark skin and painted and then on foot. And they really, you know, obviously right now I can see that they were protecting their space and we were kind of intruders on that.
Yes.
But at that point in time when we were scared that this was our land that we'd been given by the state and, you know, we were doing this and I was scared to protect, you know, my wife and my house. But that was just like this isolated feeling and nobody was happy because she wasn't happy and I wasn't happy. And in the end, on the end of that life, I died protecting the wife and the house. Yeah, so that was that one.
And so, okay, do you have any idea where in New South Wales that was?
Oh, it just felt like big, thick bush. Like I felt like I wasn't that far from Sydney, but it was far enough that at that period of time, which I would have said was late 1800s,
okay,
that it felt like I was a mile away and just really, really isolated.
Yes. And sorry, we didn't mention earlier, but the life with Laura, the life as Laura, that was also 1800s, wasn't it?
Oh, really early, like late 1700s, early 1800s.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. So another sort of, you know, sad ending there. And what about the fourth life that came through?
So in the fourth one, I had the vision was around that I was a lady that lived in, well, I think Europe somewhere, probably England or around there. And in that dream, I was a war widow. So I'd met my husband and gone on a boat to live with him and he'd gone off to war. I described in that vision, I described myself as having short curly hair, as being, you know, as having to wear this really thick, heavy jacket because of how cold it is. And when he goes off to war, he leaves me with five children.
Oh.
And in that vision, I had the names Margaret and Michael come to me, and their names that are very familiar. I just, like, they're ones that kind of roll off the tongue for me, if that makes sense.
Mm.
And then that one, he left to go to war. And
do you know which war, Tegan?
Pretty sure it's World War II.
Okay.
So I had like the vision of the uniform in particular of what he was wearing, and there was a very prominent red patch that was on there. And I'm fairly certain I tracked it down to be part of the uniform of, well, one of the uniforms of World War II in that English area. So
okay, so you think he was an Englishman?
Potentially, but I mean, so there's a couple of uniforms that are very, really similar to each other. So I've actually, and there's not really much distinguishing between them. I know that she lived in an English place because of the stone road, like there was, you know, the big
the cobblestone
road.
Yeah.
And the wall and the houses were kind of very similar. I had a very similar thing. And I know that it's about that time because I really have quite an affinity with jazz music, which is really odd because not a lot of people are real keen on jazz anymore. But jazz music actually makes me feel quite calm. So I actually think it's associated with her and that time frame that she, you know, lived in.
So because that was after the war when you were experiencing her because she was a widow, because there's more to that story.
Yeah, he went away to war and never came back. So she then spent the rest of her life looking as a widow and never really remarried or had any other partners, but raised the five children on her own and eventually died of relatively old age of stomach issues. So
right. So stomach issues seem to be a little bit of a theme too, would you say? Because
absolutely.
Yeah, because if we go the Scottish life, she died of stomach problems, and then Laura in America died of starvation, which again is, you know, the digestive tract. I don't think you mentioned this, but you told me earlier that the Australian man died from a wound to the stomach. Is that right?
Yeah, with a spear, yeah.
Okay, and then we have the war widow. Remind us what happened there.
She died of older age from a pain in her stomach.
Okay.
She passed away in hospital.
So what bearing does that have, that particular, you know, stomach thing on your life, do you think, your life today?
So our family has celiac in their our family history. So I'm pretty sure I actually may fall also into that category, but I've never actually been tested for it. But I definitely have a lot of the symptoms that go with it. So.
Okay, so that's one piece of the puzzle. But how did you feel about coming out with so much information in the first session that you've ever had?
I did say to her, like, because I am a bit of a critic and I am a bit skeptical even about my own thoughts, how do I know that this isn't just a story that I've made up in my mind? Because, you know, sometimes you think that. You think, am I making a story up just to make somebody else happy that
you're
there?
Yeah.
And she said to me, do you think you could come up with that much detail in such a short amount of time? And now the session was only maybe 45 minutes tops altogether. So she's like, do you think you could come up with that amount of detail in such a short amount of time on your own without any prompting? And, you know, I went home and I thought about that and I tried to do it actually. And the answer was no, I couldn't make it up.
So you tried, so you went home and with a piece of paper and a pen, you tried to come up with four stories or what did you do?
Oh yeah, I tried to write four stories that were quite as detailed and as time appropriate and because there's things in there that even as someone who likes a bit of history and likes to know, I had no idea about some of these things until I researched them afterwards and like, yep, that is something that would have happened in that time frame, in that storyline, in that place.
So you did reveal things that you had no knowledge of.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like what? Will you give us an example?
Like particularly around the castle, just around the way that daily life works. And I can't even think of anything particular, but it was around I think it was the shoes actually, which was the first thing, because when I talked about, you know, the shoes on their feet, I was like, oh, surely they would have used, you know, I can't even think what I thought. But, you know, when I did do the research and realized, no, actually that was right, that what I thought it was wasn't what it was going to be at all.
So what were your shoes again? Did you say leather?
They felt like a leather, but I had thought to myself, well, why would the staff wear like a leather shoe? Because that would have been quite expensive to make and things like that. But then when I researched it, I realised it would have been hide or it would have been another material that would have been much more easier to make.
Right. Okay. So one of the fascinating things about this is that you told her about the four lives, as we've mentioned, but you indicated that there were six in this kind of cluster of lives that followed a certain theme. What do you think that theme is?
The theme is around feeling alone and feeling dependent on people and feeling really, you know, sad about their control in their life.
so the individual about the lack of control that they have over their own life? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like in the castle, you know, obviously Mary had was dependent on the you know, the person that was in charge. Laura was dependent on her her bosses, obviously. Even in the bush, you know, the man was dependent on the state for giving him the land, you mm-hmm, know, he's kind mm-hmm. of forced to go and do this. And in the last one, I think she was very dependent on the fact that she couldn't control her husband going away and not coming back. And she was left very dependent on the fact that she was now a single mother in an era that, you know, didn't really overly support that.
Mm, and you've mentioned being a single mother, and certainly that relates to your life today. But in what way do you think overall this theme of the loneliness relates to you today, Tegan?
I think I've always struggled to kind of keep people close, and I think I've always sought what I thought was love and what I thought was connections with other people, to really find that perhaps my understanding of what love was is not really what it is, if that makes sense. And
yeah.
I think I've always sought that, you know, as a way to kind of make up for all of these places where I was alone, where I didn't have that connection. I was thinking that I was missing out on something that they didn't have. And I think that's what really made me anxious, is that at that point in time, I felt like I was repeating that cycle, that I was feeling anxious and I was feeling sad about being alone and being scared about how was I going to do this on my own again, and all of that sort of stuff.
Mm,
so
that came from their experiences.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the day after your regression, you dreamt of the fifth life in the cluster.
Yeah, not too long afterwards, I had a dream about another life, which was so real and so vivid and really stayed with me for a little while afterwards, and I wrote it down because it was just so intense. But and then and that's made the connection for me to the another life in this story. But in that one, as a farm boy who fell in love with the maiden of the you know, the big manor house, and you know, while we were together in secret, there was no way to actually be together, so we got caught and we got punished and separated and died isolated. I was kicked out of the manor in that way, and I can, you know, picture us walking away from the house knowing that I was alone.
Mm.
Yeah.
So we're back in England now for that one, the manor house?
Yeah, I think so. And probably looking at around the 1600 time frame.
Oh, okay. Right. But, Tegan, am I correct in saying that you felt like you carried their pain and loneliness until you recalled the sixth life? Is that right?
Absolutely. So I had the five and I sat on them for about 4 or 5 months, and I felt like I really wasn't getting anywhere with it. It didn't really feel like it was coming to fruition as about what I wanted to learn from that. So I decided I'd try something else, and I did some Reiki.
Yeah. So Reiki? You went and had a session, a Reiki session.
I did have a session, and the lovely lady that I went to see uses vibrational healing to do her session. And it was during this session that I had a vision and dreamt of the sixth one, which was a Middle Eastern man in the desert, really with his camel, just walking along, not really feeling like he was going anywhere, that anyone was looking for him, but he was just, you know, being very isolated and being very alone.
And he was on a journey.
Yeah, it felt like he was, you know, going somewhere, but he didn't really know where he was going. And the vision was really short in that one, but it was enough that when I was away, came to after the session, that I was like, oh, wow, that was the sixth, that was it.
Wow, but you didn't see his death, did you?
No, I didn't, because it was just part of the session. I wasn't actually the hypnotist, and I haven't had anything after that, so I don't know that it was a very important death, if that makes sense,
yes.
In terms of finding that solution, but it was almost like the last piece of the puzzle that was slotted in.
Oh, wow. So how was it that recalling this sixth life as the Middle Eastern man, and what era, do you have any idea what era he was in?
I would think he's somewhere between the 16th and the 1700s in there somewhere.
Okay. And why do you think recalling that vision of seeing him on the road, well, in the desert with his camel, why was that the last piece of the puzzle?
I'm not really sure. I've thought about this a lot, but I think it was just about making the picture complete. And I felt like once I had the picture complete that I had all the information, and then it was just about pulling that, finding the bit in it that I was supposed to learn from that. So I did a lot more meditation. I did a lot more reflection. I tried to do a lot more time not being busy, just trying to be without the noise, which is hard when you've got two children. But,
yeah.
You know, I think it felt really important for me to kind of work out at the time, and so I really focused on it.
And do you feel as if in acknowledging these six lives that you've reconciled that theme of loneliness and that you've learnt the lessons you needed to learn?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really kind of interesting, but I think what the lesson for me in there was, it was just about love. I mean, it feels like I should feel like I should go out and find someone else to be with, but it actually feels like the opposite. I think I've come to the conclusion that actually in all of these lives, even though I felt like I was alone, I was actually quite loved, and I had a lot of love in my life. It was just that I was looking for that mysterious something that was going to come and sweep me away and solve all my problems and make me happy, if that makes sense. Mm. Whereas for me, when I look at reflection, actually there is a lot of love, and, you know, they all gave a lot of love, and, you know, they were quite committed to the people and loyal to the people they loved.
Which is an act of love. Yeah, right. Yeah. But you didn't see it. Yeah. Okay.
No, it was just very kind of, it was, you know, because they were so, it felt like they were so focused on, you know, I'm alone from people, and they're alone from having that one person that's their romantic love, I guess.
So maybe seeing that sixth man, that he's on the path, he's walking, you didn't see sort of an end to his journey, that might stand for you today, and, you know, you continue on the path and you continue learning.
Yeah, and for me today, I it really comes down to the fact that I've had to step back from looking for another person to make me happy.
Yeah.
I've really had to kind of look at the connections in my life and go, well, I have a lot of people that love me and I love a lot of people. And that's enough. If I have somebody else that comes along from a romantic sense, then great. That's, you know, wonderful. But it doesn't actually take away from the other love that I have, and I can't feel like I'm missing or that I'm alone because of that scenario.
That's very profound, and I think that will help a lot of people. And what about your anxiety and depression? How's that today?
As of the sixth life going, it actually has, I wouldn't say it goes, because obviously mental health is something that is a constant, you know, to and froing of trying to find the right thing in the right scenario. But for me, at this particular point in time, I've stopped my medication. I've stopped needing to go to the psychologist and have appointments. I feel like I can function. I feel way clearer than I did, you know, even 18 months ago before that original relationship started. So,
wow. So that's how powerful this experience of remembering these past lives has been for you, Tegan.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, on that note, let's end with the question I ask all my guests on The Ghost Files. What can an encounter with the dead, and in your case it's with your past selves, teach us about living?
That we're more loved than we know, and those people are around us, and that it's in us, and there's always more to what we're feeling than just what's happening right here, right now.
That's very valuable advice. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Tegan, spending time with us on The Ghost Files, sharing your story. It's much appreciated.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Ghost Files. If you have a story that you'd like to share with me, I'd love to hear it. Please email me at karinamachado@optusnet.com.au. Thank you.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.